making sense of it all. Saffron, saffron,
saffron. Esteemed social commentator Alicia Dixon says, Obama's gonna change the world, and he's cute too.
Well done. So and he's married.
Does anybody want to comment on, is Obama going to change the world? And if so, how?
Possibly, and if so, will it be for the good or for the worse?
I believe in change.
Yeah.
Well, he's got sort of, this is the thing, he has to. If he doesn't change the world, when George Bush or Al Gore, or whoever, Al Gore didn't get it, obviously, but the last few presidents, they've just got to do all right. He has to change the world or he's failed. Yeah. Unless he changes it in a brilliant, powerful way, people aren't going to care. Do you know what I mean? He has to do well.
What gets me that he's paraphrasing Bob the Builder with "We can't do, we can do it."
We can't do it.
Do you think he knew that when he came up with it?
I don't know. I don't know.
But I think what he's done so much already in terms of PR for the American nation around the world, and to a certain extent, especially in these early months, or maybe even in just the first year, what will be remembered is not necessarily what he's done or what he said, but the way he's made people feel and the way he's sort of instigated a change of heart for a lot of people in their opinions of America. And I think that's what a lot of people will take from these early, these early days.
A lot of it is due to the failings of Bush, alienated a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think that change has done a world of good. Yeah. I think so far so good
then.
We'll see.
A lot of American critics say usually when a prime minister is voted in, he has between president has between a year and 18 months in which sort of like a happy period in which it's not happy too bad. Period. But I think that with Obama, it could be well into 2 years before people start to really start criticising, which is quite dangerous. If you think someone's allowed 2 years to mess up and they're the president of America, that's a long time.
But we have to say, is Obama God's man? Would you say, Tony? Is he God's man, do you think?
Depends what you think about God's purposes. I mean, I think that in one sense he could be, but it may not be in the positive sense which everyone's hoping for. Yeah. It's interesting that a lot of the comments which you find around the world are talking about him as a sort of global president. Yeah. He made a statement when he was in Berlin, there is no challenge too great for a world that stands as one. Right. And Henry Kissinger was interviewed recently on the television, and he made a comment that the current global crisis is an opportunity for the New World Order, and he sees Barack Obama as a man to bring in this New World Order, which raises a few concerns, especially amongst the right wing in America, who sees this New World Order as the coming Antichrist world system, and that the world government as something which will be opposed to Christianity and to true faith in Jesus. So,
of course, before then, a lot of people will call him the Messiah, whether it was tongue in cheek or not.
Yeah, I mean, Louis Farrakhan actually said he was some sort of Messiah figure who was the.
Yeah, it's weird because we were listening to LBC last week, and Jenny Barnett, I think, and they were discussing this, is he the Messiah? And a Christian came on and got very negative and said, of course he's not the Messiah, blah, blah, blah. But then Jenny Barnett, sort of speaking probably for many, said, but I think this is what the world actually needs now, is someone to sort out the mess that we've got into, and, just at this time we sort of need a sort of Messiah figure. So it's almost like, perhaps he is the man for this time, whether it's for good or bad, prophetically speaking.
Yeah, I mean, if he manages to sort out the U.S. economy, to bring peace to the Middle East, to do one or two of these things, then people might think, this is the Messiah. But then if he does that, then it could also be...
Yes, if he does that, at what cost, ultimately?
I mean, there's been a lot of questions about his religious views. I mean, there were stuff going around before he came to power about him being a secret Muslim, which I think was black propaganda. Yeah. I mean, he says he's a Christian. He went to this black church, which was run by Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who created him some problems because of his somewhat anti-white views.
He's left there, isn't he?
Distanced himself from that. I've got a statement here which he says about his views, which I think one I need to take seriously, because what he says, says, I'm a Christian, I'm rooted in the Christian tradition. I believe that there are many paths to the same place, that it is a belief that there is a higher power, a belief that we are connected as people, that there are values that transcend race or culture that move us forward, there's an obligation for all of us individually as well as collectively to take responsibility to make those values live, which basically is saying that, you know, all roads lead to God or to heaven. He also says he doesn't believe there's a heaven and a hell. He's pro-abortion and pro-homosexuality, and in fact I've just got some stuff through today from the Prophetic News Watch, which is a comment on his website and his policies. This is by Douglas Johnson, who's the director of the National Right to Life, speaking about his abortion policy. Says one effect of Obama's anticipated order will be to divert many millions of dollars away from groups that do not promote abortion into the hands of those organizations that are most militant in promoting abortion as a population control method.
So he's actually done something already. I just read on, I don't know where, but it says he's lifted a ban on federal funding for foreign family planning agencies that promote or give information about abortion.
George
Bush had blocked that. But now immediately he's sort of let it go through.
So he's saying this man is criticising that, Douglas Johnson, saying this is promoting the increased use of abortion as a means of population control. But you also believe the UN actually want to control the population to bring it down, then that's another interesting issue. Another way of controlling the population is through promoting homosexuality, because homosexuals don't produce children. And interestingly,
population control. That's interesting.
Says Obama supports full civil unions that give same-sex couples legal rights and privileges equal to those of married couples. Obama also believes we need to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act and enact legislation that would ensure that the 1,000 plus federal legal rights and benefits currently provided on the basis of marital status are extended to same-sex couples, so pushing of homosexual marriage, etc. So you can see that from that, his policies are very much on the sort of the liberal left of politics, which would tie in with a lot of what's going on in Europe as well. So you'd have this sort of union between.
And you think there's been a backlash against the right wing?
I'm sure there is. You could end up with sort of hate crimes against anyone who opposes these policies.
It's funny because. I mean, I'm not saying that I disagree or agree with his actual politics, but it's always a danger when people are so hyped up during the voting process to vote without necessarily actually knowing what they're voting for. They're just voting for an image and voting for like a bandwagon. And it's interesting that probably millions of people voted for him without actually reading his policies or his history or anything.
One of the things which I think is general anyway, not voting, it's the personality.
It's style, not substance.
I did some radio stuff, and when I was at the university up in Lincoln, we did some stuff, we were on air, and we had these American girls, we had some English people, and I said to them, who out of you would vote Obama? They all said they would. Mm-hmm. And I said, can one of you name one of his policy changes from George Bush? Silence. And obviously there's no such thing as silence on radio, so you don't. And play the song. It's that thing. It's that, and similarly on inauguration day, I was really hyped up. I really looked forward to it. Yeah. But when I first started that, I'd forgotten it even happened. But by about 4 o'clock, when I was on air and when it was about to happen, I was really excited. But I knew nothing more about the person. Yeah. I've been caught up. I've been lifted up on everyone else's emotion based on. And it's just a continual uprising until by the end of the day, you're really excited and you had absolutely no more understanding or knowledge than you did at the beginning.
I think Louis just made a point there. What I was observing also is that the excitement of this world leader, as he's being looked to, the excitement of him being able to change the world, work miracles, literally, because let's face it, some of those things are going to be more miracle working, and people are being blinded to what is really behind and what is in that person. And as what you've just said, Tony, if he calls himself Christian, and he allows abortion, homosexuality, you know, the two major things were, as a Christian, you would never ever think should happen. Promotes, which is even worse. And I did see a rally, it was on the press news, And there was a rally of in America where there were hundreds of people coming against him for this abortion. Yeah.
Only
for
hundreds.
Well, there were hundreds. Well, maybe this is a start.
Yeah.
You know, but that start, obviously there's a few people that have had their eyes open. This is dangerous.
Yeah.
How will it progress? Yeah. And we always know that something in that way to progress is one of the most devastating things for a nation.
Country. There's a radio station in America, used to be called Way of the Master, now Wretched Radio, but it takes the same position as us, and all through, even though they weren't allowed to say too much about the president, you know, the process of selecting the president, that's the one issue they kept saying, do you really want to vote for a president who is pro-abortion? For them, that was the big issue. And,
the thing about this whole election, this whole idea about Barack Obama being the Messiah, about the future, about the state of America, it all comes down to there are some people that want a saviour that is true, and there is some people that want a saviour that's just going to fix some earthly problems. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There are those that just want to have enough money, that just want to be able to live a nice, and there are those that want truth. And that's why people are calling Barack Obama the Messiah, because they don't want truth, they want a nice life.
No,
and Barack Obama seems to give them that. But Christians, and biblically, the Messiah is more than just a problem fixer.
Yeah.
And that's what people are... There's become a new definition for Messiah, which is someone that makes your life easier than it is at the moment.
With America.
And that's what he's promising.
He hasn't done anything.
With both Bush, the media hype has been... demonization of somebody who's actually hasn't, you know, he's made some big mistakes, but he's been ultra demonized, and that the opposite's happened to Obama.
It's all about perception and feelings, and that people have got good feelings at the moment, and that, I mean, psychologically, that lifts
that can
people.
Happen.
It also reminds you that when Tony Blair became Prime Minister, there was about 80% approval rating.
Similar sort of figure.
And within a few years.
Thinking about the race thing, it took me back to... the whole Margaret Thatcher thing, everyone, I'm guessing, I wasn't there, but was very excited and intrigued about the fact that this was a woman Prime Minister.
Yeah.
But the reality is, when we look back now, we don't go, wow, that was the first woman Prime Minister.
Yeah.
The legacy that she left, whether it's positive or negative, you know, I'm not saying I wasn't there,
but
that's what you're looking at. It's the same. We might go, oh, this is the first black Prime Minister. And it is a good thing. It's a good step for America.
Yeah.
However, it will only be good if his walk and if it leaves a good legacy, or else it won't.
He's come from nowhere, though, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Usually presidents are like governor of Texas or California.
So did Sarah Palin, though. She pretty much turned up from nowhere as well, because they were playing two different.
Yeah, but he's the one that's got in. There's no experience of working under pressure. He's got the finger on the button now, hasn't he? And he's got no background. He just.
But I don't think he's been plucked from nowhere. When
yeah,
he
not
has
nowhere, but
not he hasn't picked off the street. You know.
No, but he hasn't had a prominent position in state. Of,
I think
you know,
they noticed very, very early on. I think we saw his story, didn't we? When he made a opening speech or was a special speech,
the
isn't it?
The keynote speech at the
keynote
Democratic convention.
And I think they could see this man's got charisma.
Yeah.
Oh, this man
the way he speaks,
has
a powerful
speaker. Yeah. He could, and there was something that his friend said. He, after the speech, he'd been out on tour and he was speaking, he came back to his friend and said, they believed every word I said. And he was astonished that he had got this crowd.
Mm.
And he felt he could hold them.
Yeah.
And they believed every word. And he was astonished by it.
Mm.
And I think at that point, he knew, probably in the back of his mind, he could make it to the White House. He could do it.
Mm-hmm.
If he could do it to a big, you know, like 30,000 crowd or whatever, he felt them.
Yeah.
That he had them in the palm of his hand.
They
believed every word he said.
Yeah. It's all about delivery and perception and the fact that he, the black issue. And
same with Blair as well.
When
Blair got in, I've mentioned this before in previous times, the morning that, you know, he had got in, as I heard, I said, oh Lord, and I had a vision of five monkeys with shotguns, and it couldn't have been any more true. It couldn't be much, Darwin, couldn't be much more true. But on Barack Obama, the next day after his inauguration, I was praying for him and his family, and I had a vision there. And this, I was wide awake, wasn't a dream or anything. Yeah. And I saw him standing, and he went sideways. He fell sideways to the left.
Yeah.
Now, whatever that means, I know that's something spiritual. Yeah. Yeah. Whether that means, I know I've heard of people saying assassination. Hope not.
Oh, wow.
Hope not. Because let's face it, we don't want anybody to be hurt. Or is he going to be pushed to the sides through something
easily
else?
Easily manipulated, maybe. Is a puppet, perhaps? In that
well, sense? I think they're all puppets to a point, you know. And we were even talking about, you know, is he a pawn?
Yeah.
You know, he's a very powerful one.
Tony said, I read one of your articles, and you said the media have accepted him incredibly well.
Yeah.
And that they were part of the reason why he got in so easily. Is there some higher powers there that
are
manipulation?
There's a sense in which politics is manipulated today anyway, that people, you know, an image is given to people.
The new world order.
I mean, Israel wanted a king, and God said, no, I don't want to give you a king. Yeah. Trust me.
Yeah.
And eventually I don't say God caved in and said, okay, I'll give you a king, see how bad it goes. Yeah. And it's that thing, you know, we don't want to be governed by a true Messiah. We just want a bloke that can just fix some stuff that we can look at.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. And I'm not saying that we should never have governments or anything like that, but there is an element in which, you know, when a country or a nation says, we don't want a true Messiah, we don't want truth, we don't want God, we just want a person that can do some nice stuff. God may give that, but like to Israel, it didn't quite work out.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
But if there are global powers, I mean, there's organisations like the Council of Federal Relations, Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers and so on, who are sort of high-powered people who meet together, who also
have... Is he actually involved in it? Is there evidence that he works with?
I don't think he probably is at the moment, but I mean, whether these people will promote somebody and push them to be the person who they can then...
A power behind the throne.
...control. Yeah. I mean, how much does the president actually...
Yeah. You'd think if they were in charge, they would have just replaced like for like and put John McCain in. Yeah. I mean, if they were really
Bush their man, because it seemed to me that he was a bit of a mistake. Because
it was very close.
It was a dodgy one, wasn't it?
And Al Gore apparently conceded and said,
if
"Well,
Al Gore had gone in, I think it would have been even worse.
Al Gore would
have gone completely opposite way."
Yeah.
Can you explain? I mean, to the ordinary person, I don't know about these different organisations, so it'd be interesting to know.
Yeah.
What these organisations are.
It's a Club of Rome as well.
Yeah, the Club of Rome, Bilderbergers. I mean, there are meetings which take place regularly in secret places, or not secret, but I mean that you're not in, the press isn't invited, nobody's invited to know what's going on.
And are they particularly prime ministers, presidents, heads of government?
People with power and money.
Ken Clark is a member of the Bilderbergers, and there are other people who...
Mandelson?
Yeah, I'm sure Mandelson.
The
Bilderbergers is a European outfit, and the Council of Foreign Relations is a...
What's the one where they dress up and worship an owl? What's that one?
I don't know about that.
I read about that.
Yeah, a place in California.
That's Girl Guides.
No. There is something. There is a weird
Illuminati. No, it's like, it's like a club thing. It's on Wikipedia, though. It's not exactly secret.
Yeah,
I think that's Is that a university thing?
Wasn't Clinton recorded going to one of those things?
Probably.
That's what I was saying. There's YouTube clips.
I mean, I don't know how profitable it is to go down this road of sort of looking for who's controlling what, because you've got all sorts of forces. But the fact is that whether we like it or not, the world is being pushed together into this globalist network. And, I mean, the credit crunch and all the financial issues are showing that, you know, either we all stand together or fall together. I mean,
do you think in some way these people have manipulated the financial situation?
I don't know. I mean, because, you know, sometimes, I mean, you read some websites on the internet and it's all sort of manipulated by a few people sort of sitting in a smoke-filled room and just sort of pulling the strings.
The Jews.
How much
underground caverns.
Conspiracy or just the way things are moving. I mean, if you look at some of the comments I've put here in an article in my magazine about the credit crisis, and you got comments from, this is the IMF, a man called Strauss-Kahn. He says, we need to change the current crisis into a new opportunity. We need a new deal for a new world. talks about the crisis is solvable by the joint efforts of the authorities and certainly central banks, governments, and also the private sector has an essential role to play. to get out of the situation. It's solvable at the level of the planet because we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
So they're saying that actually on their own, nations are not going to be able to solve this. We need to have nations coming together to work out a solution.
So do you think there will be a world president at some point then?
Well, this is a possibility. I mean, the European Union is coming together. You've got the federalisation of Europe as an example of how the world could be brought together.
Yeah.
There was an article in the Financial Times recently actually saying that a world government would be a good idea to solve the problems. Now, you know, I don't think we're that near to it at the moment because how much would the Chinese play ball? How much would the Russians play ball? And and yet, at the same time, they all depend on each other. Like, the Russians can make a big deal about this gas, but at the same time, they need the money from the West to from Europe to pay for their bills, so they can't actually cut the gas off.
Yeah.
Chinese can make all sorts of threats, but their economy actually depends upon them trading and... Everything, they've invested huge. I mean, there's huge amounts of Chinese money actually involved in America. So if America goes down the tubes, China goes down the tubes as well.
What I don't understand, we talked about this before. How comes America is like £10 trillion in debt?
Yeah.
Who are they in debt to?
Yeah.
I mean, someone can ask for their money back, can't they?
it is various people actually.
Is it Arab money and Chinese, Japanese?
It's quite a lot. Spread all over.
An awful lot.
It's just the sum total.
How do they justify it living so lavishly when they're so massively in debt? I've never understood
that. But at the same time, they are still the strongest currency, even though it goes up. Yeah. It's
and the strongest power in the world.
But economics, economics works on different levels, isn't it? There's your day-to-day people earning their money for their jobs. There's the trading level. There are different levels, aren't there?
This is a comment from Gary Carr. Gary Carr's an American Christian sort of commentator on this, about the $10 trillion debt. He says, funds for... dealing with this debt are drying up. The fact is our government is almost as broke as the institutions it's trying to assist. Yeah. It's in no position to help. The obvious next question is, who will bail out the US government when it goes broke? Mm. Once the current system has become completely undone, I believe a new system will be proposed as a solution. It will include some form of global government based on regional economic arrangements similar to the European Union and the proposed North American Union. Global planners have long understood there can't be a new one-world system until the old order has failed. And you've got our own Gordon talking about, he says here, a need for a new international financial architecture and enhanced global cooperation to monitor and then supervise financial flows that know no borders. So.
Yeah.
Could it be just one currency? Because I was thinking of the value of money, you know, if it goes down and down and down, it's like in Zimbabwe, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the money had no worth at all, did it? I mean...
Well, not Germany after the First World War.
You know, the money you've got in the bank isn't
once
worth
they
anything.
Start printing money to sort of bail out the debts, then
they're suggesting to do over here, aren't they?
Yeah. I've heard some people actually buying gold now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
they think gold will never lose its value.
Well, it's very high. At the moment. I mean, it goes up and down like anything else.
Yeah.
But
if you've got a gold bar, they're saying, you know, your money's safe there, but what do you do with a gold bar?
Well, you exchange it for money.
for a
bag of crisps.
So you take
a flake of this.
Carry it around with you.
And who will have the money if you want to trade it in?
Well, as the money fluctuates, if it's, you know, worth £600 an ounce, and it's worth £6 million
in the vaults, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I've got some gold.
In the past, money was... based on gold. So if you had a £5 note, it was the equivalent of £5 of gold in the Bank of England, but that no longer hasn't existed for years.
Oh, that's coming
so,
with gold standard, isn't it?
So now you have basically, I mean, the dollar has become the global trading currency. So the reserve currency, that's what they call it. Because, like, the price of oil, for example, is priced in dollars. So it's so many dollars a barrel. Now, if some of the Arab countries, especially Iran, actually is proposing that this is changed and that the dollar is no longer the reserve currency. If that happens, then America is even more in struck than it is now. And the question then is which currency could be the reserve currency? And you've then got the euro as another possibility. Or who knows? I mean, I don't claim to be...
A new currency that hasn't been created yet.
So you have a... Presently, there's a... The whole thing is somewhat in flux and... it's like, you know, where's it all going to come down?
So you know, we're dealing with one portion of the global situation, which is the economic side.
Yeah.
And you've got the religion side.
Yeah. So it does seem to be accelerating.
Plus
you know.
The Middle East, of course, which is another issue. We
another issue.
One of the interesting things that I read was that apparently one of the first thing he did in office was to make calls regarding
the Middle East. Yeah.
Now, that, I think, for a man to go in as President of the United States and for his first job to be... Yeah. You know, a small part of Israel. Yeah. I think that's actually not necessarily a good sign. It depends how he does it.
Yeah.
But at least there is a desire to see something done. Whether his opinions are for,
we don't know
Israel,
whether he did it because someone advised him it would look good if he did it.
This is true.
You know.
I don't think he would have made those calls necessarily if there had been quite a long period of ceasefire. Like, I mean, because the Gaza conflict was so fresh, I think he had to be seen to be doing something as soon as he could.
And what did he do first, though? Yeah.
Well, he's been planning on, you know, the, like, I don't know, this fiscal stimulus and all that stuff. That's been on his agenda since he, you know, was elected. So I think he just needs to be seen to be doing something.
Yeah, because America didn't have much of a part to play, did they, in the Gaza resolution.
Yeah.
So, Tony, do you know anything about who he spoke to?
I don't actually, but, I mean, his statements on Israel have been, I mean, the Israeli government's been quite pleased with what he said. I mean, before the conflict, I mean, he said that Israel had a right to defend itself against missiles coming out of Gaza, and he said that no country should have to tolerate missiles coming in onto its territory.
He put the money where his mouth is, so, I mean, aid. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's...
Vote getter.
He's obviously got to... deal with a huge problem there, and at the moment, I mean the ceasefire deal was that Israel would withdraw and that Hamas would not rearm.
Yeah,
I mean, the Jewish Chronicle today says that the tunnels are opening and that the Egyptians are already, you know, missiles are going through the tunnels. So Egypt is
allowing it.
Yeah. And the Egyptians are the Egyptians are turning a blind eye.
Yeah.
It's also interesting. It said why, because the Bedouin are the main ones who are doing this. It's not actually Al Qaeda or Hamas. It's the Bedouin who do it for money. I mean, it's a deal.
So in the case of the Bedouin are another organisation, almost like a hitman, as it were.
Bedouin are just Arabs who wander through the desert. But it's for them, it's
a money maker.
Yeah. Money maker.
Yeah. And are they doing it on the part of who are they being paid by? That's what I mean.
Well,
or is that
Hamas? Whoever they pay.
I mean, they don't just smuggle weapons. I mean, they smuggle hashish and cigarettes.
Why aren't the United Nations there, then?
Well, this is it. This is what Israel wants. I mean, Israel wants some kind of force to stop that from happening. The Egyptians have said no, they won't have any troops on their border.
Do you think there's something significant about having an international force in Israel?
Yeah, there is. For sure.
I mean, not biblically.
I mean, there can't really be... Yeah. I mean, basically, Israel cannot have a lasting peace without some kind of outside mediation force, which is going to...
Yeah.
Stop it. Now, I mean, the Jewish Chronicle actually, which I didn't know until I read the Jewish Chronicle, why the Egyptians turn a blind eye, because the Bedouin make money from these tunnels. Yeah. It's the only way to make money in that part of the world, which is a pretty godforsaken part of the world, you might say. The Egyptians are pushing the tourist trade on the other side of the Red Sea. Mm. And according to information which was there, that the terrorist attacks on the tourist sites were not Al-Qaeda, they were Bedouin, when the last time that Egypt tried to interfere with the tunnels in Gaza.
Right.
So basically they sent a signal saying that if you mess with us with these tunnels in Gaza, we're going to mess with you on the...
So why isn't... That's not common knowledge about the Bedouin. No.
So that's another issue which...
So is Mammon coming centre stage with that particular thing?
Western tourists going to sun themselves on the beaches of the Red Sea.
Yeah.
Is this like a third group? Is it completely unrelated? Because I don't know if anyone...
Bedouin are just Arabs who traditionally wandered through the desert. They didn't have a settled home. They lived in tents.
Arabs, in a sense. Or travellers.
Abraham and Lot wandering through the desert with his tents. But, I mean, that's their way of life.
Yeah.
They've actually been messed up by borders and... modern controls and so on, so they don't really particularly like that because they used to just wander from Egypt to Jordan, all through that place. Now they've got international borders and stuff there, so that makes it difficult for them.
Okay.
The possibility now is that if Hamas gets more weapons in, including even superior weapons which can reach Tel Aviv, then basically, I mean, that's another formula for the next war.
Yeah, and the thing with this like current ceasefire is it's there's two different terms. It's like Israel called a ceasefire based on the terms that Hamas wouldn't fire rockets, and then Hamas announced a ceasefire based on the complete withdrawal of Israeli troops. So that, I don't think there is like a So there isn't actually a proper agreement yet, is there?
No, and there will never will be.
No. And Hamas always talks about I mean, when they say ceasefire, they mean a period of calm. I think the word, I can't remember what the word in Arabic was, but it means period of calm, begins with a T. But it basically means we're not going to hit you, but we're not making peace with you. We're just sort of having a lull in the proceedings so we can rearm and get ready, which I guess is what they're going to do now.
Do you think Obama has sufficient clout now to be the peacemaker in the Middle East?
I don't know. That's the question. Yeah. I mean, I mean, even Netanyahu, who's on the right wing of Israeli politics, he said that Obama's a man who can bring peace to the Middle East. So whether they think that because he's got some more credibility with the Arabs that he can do it.
But then again, they've got to say words about peace, even if they think themselves it's not possible. They can't say it's not possible. So what they say in the media, what Netanyahu says,
the other political question is, will there be a terrorist attack on the United States? I mean, a lot of chatter about, you know, in the first 100 days or something of his presidency, some kind of terrorist will mount an attack, which will then...
That happened at the beginning of Bush's reign, didn't it?
Interesting one, which, I just got this through today from the Prophetic News Watch about Al-Qaeda cell in Algeria. Where, actually, this was the front pages of the Sun this week, but this group of terrorists was killed by a Black Death type of plague.
Yeah, I saw that.
Now, the question is, was this, and it says here, was this, it was initially believed that they caught the disease through fleas on rats attracted by poor living conditions in their forest hideout, but now there are claims that the cell was developing the disease as a weapon to use against Western cities. Experts said the group was developing chemical and biological weapons. If that's the case, then you have another huge threat, which I don't know what the defence is, if any.
Where were these deaths? In Algeria.
There's an Al-Qaeda cell.
About 40 of them died from Black Death.
It just seemed to me, going back to the inauguration, is that his speech was very inclusive to people of other religions.
Yeah.
He emphasised his middle name as part of the swearing in, Hussein. So, and also the prayer... given before by Rick Warren was so inclusive and so sort of Islamic in nature as
very
part
subtle.
Of it. Subtle, but when you analyse it, you just realise when anyone analyses it, everyone's going to analyse it, as you say, we've got something for everybody in this prayer. And I remember listening to previous prayers by like Billy Graham and other sort of Christian leaders for past presidents. They're always straightforward Christian with and then praying in the name of Jesus afterwards. It was all like a proper prayer, but this, even praying in the name of Jesus, he fluffed it a little bit by praying in the name, and then he gave all his the Jewish name, the Islamic name, so it was like he's diluting what is a straightforward Christian
prayer.
So I'm saying because of that the Muslims would say see that as a signal perhaps that perhaps this administration
but come on, what is America if not a whole mix of people? I mean, I know that it is a, like, you know, I know it was on the but the people that actually voted for him in, they're made up of...
It's meant to be a nation under God, isn't it?
You know, but let's face reality. I mean, it's not, we're not 200 years in the past. This is like present day, and he has to be... He has to. Well, it's progress, it's change.
Well,
I mean, that was his ticket. Yeah. I mean, it was the ticket
progress
of change.
Away
so.
From the central
progress and change, do you think?
Well,
progress implies progress. Change. And change. So I think whether the whole nation under God thing, I think that's, in a sense, that doesn't actually, as a concept, make a lot of sense, because if we have a one-on-one relationship with God through Christ, then can a whole nation be under God? If it's for, and the reality is, you know, we can freak out about America not being a nation under God, but actually we should be freaking out about the individual people.
But
that
they've
don't
always
have
assumed that they were God's own country, America.
And
I think that was partly why they've got to the point there, because they thought, oh, well, we're God's country, we live in America, we're American, so we're sort of 50% covered. so we can go and do what we want tonight. It's not quite
but they attribute the fact that they're so powerful and they have comfortable living, you know, despite all the things that are going around them. They've always felt that they were specially blessed. It's always been an American part of their psyche, isn't it? Which is why the credit crunch has come a bit of a shock to them, and which is why perhaps this false peace that Barack is going to give is they're taking it in because they want to keep their lifestyles. You know,
nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I don't think.
No, but as Louis said, there's deeper things.
I mean, I think there are social issues which I would agree with him on, actually. I mean, relating particularly to the poverty and the social medical care. I mean, I saw a program on television about medical carers.
And the lobbyists.
And the poor are sort of more or less excluded from seeing doctors.
Yeah.
Or even quite middle-class people because, you know, the cost of things. And those kind of issues, I think he does... You know, I would actually go along with what he says.
Yeah, and in fact, he's one of his things, which I found positive, was the fact that he was going to try and deal with lobbyists that, like, you know, like from chemical companies and medical companies that seem to squash all sorts of help and to the poor. So,
I think for all its claims, America's a fairly corrupt place as well. the divisions between the rich and the poor and the oppression of people within the... society.
Yeah. It's no different to any other country.
I've forgotten your name. Louis said, I mean, I think that's all nations as well. I mean, one of the Christian delusions, I think, of our time is to think that we are living in a sort of semi-Christian world or semi-Christian governments. Yeah. I mean, the world lies in the hands of the evil one, it says in 1 John, and there are people who are redeemed out of that world.
Do you think it's significant that he fluffed his inauguration, swearing in, and then swore again, but not with the Bible?
I wouldn't
is
put
it,
too much
significance. There's no spiritual significance.
The guy got the words wrong, didn't it? Wasn't even his fault, actually.
Yeah. The first one, he was repeating something, and apparently he paused. Yeah. It was the first time, basically, it was the placing of the word faithfully.
Saying the words.
He got it wrong, and Obama stopped, because Obama actually knew it, apparently, quite well. Yeah. And he stopped, but then he repeats it again, so Obama says, okay, then we probably got to say it.
But when he repeated it, he actually repeats it in the wrong way.
But copying what had been said. Yeah. But then the second time, it was being sworn in over the White House, you know, there's a thing about, oh, is there not a Bible? Now, there's two ways. You could go, oh, no, it's obviously he's evil and he's not trying to, therefore he is Satan. Or you can sit there and go, okay, then maybe it's a bad sign that in the whole of the White House there isn't a Bible. That is a bad thing.
A bit strange.
But does that reflect on Barack Obama being Satan? Yeah. I don't think so.
I'm not saying you should make the ultimate or
somewhere.
You don't have to sort of go that far and say he's Satan or Antichrist or anything like that. But it's just, you know, it's just some people would say
it was an oath, and they take that oath seriously.
Yeah, it's an oath in court or on the Bible. You know, it's a legal thing, isn't it?
However, in the Bible, it says to not use God's name or in any way swear on anything about his nature when you are to make a promise to someone. So I remember when I went to court to give evidence for someone, well, I wasn't in trouble, don't worry. I remember the day beforehand being told by a Christian guy, you know that biblically you probably shouldn't actually swear on a Bible if you're a Christian. So there's some people think actually swearing on the Bible is not the right thing to do anyway.
Teaching used to be that you should affirm not to swear on the Bible because it was a Matthew Sermon on the Mount. Yeah.
Can you clarify that?
What? Jesus in Matthew, Sermon on the Mount, what is it? Matthew 5, he says, do not swear by, where is it? Where are we?
Anything in heaven or in. No, is that the verse?
Can't find the reference, sorry. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Matthew 5:33. You shall not, again, you've heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, nor for it is God's throne, neither by earth, nor for it is footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black, but let your yes be yes, and your no be no. Mm-hmm. Whatever is more than these is from the evil one. So on the basis of that, mm-hmm. the brethren used to teach that you shouldn't swear on the Bible when you're going to give evidence.
So this whole thing for our legal system all that time about swearing on the Bible is... totally unbiblical.
But I think that's nitpicking a little bit.
But it does, people that freak out about the fact that he hasn't sworn about the Bible, you can open up your Bible and go, actually, there's an argument that says maybe it's not such a good thing in the start anyway, so don't freak out.
The thing I can't stand is that there's a certain type of Christian that would see anything, like they like a good conspiracy theory, and they like to read into things and pronounce things because of something that's said.
People who speak against it are part of a big conspiracy.
there were people, apparently, I remember that we were listening to an American radio station, and there were people with, apparently, I mean, not a massive amount, but there were people standing there with placards saying, you know, Obama is the Antichrist. And there is this paranoia thing that there is an element within Christians that when something good or any change happens,
there's an instant
fear that, because people like it, it must be wrong. And and we're not here saying that,
people taking his name and worked out numerologically.
Yeah, there is this.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sure.
There's a difference between discernment and paranoia, and I think that's what people need to get.
The fact remains is we live in interesting times.
Yes. No,
and changing times. And it, suddenly you're... Your ears prick up and your eyes start thinking, I need to read the Word of God.
You can think with your eyes.
That's exactly
it.
You
know what I mean?
It's about reading the Word of God and not on your own emotional fear, writing up placards. No, it is about studying the Word of God and discerning things. That's where discernment comes from, not from your... guessing.
It only needs for prophecies to actually happen in your day, your time, you know, your life, for you to sit up and take notice of things.
Yeah. I think we can look into this too much because, to be honest, I don't think we're even living in interesting times. You know, because I reckon people throughout history, I think people have always been saying, oh, aren't these interesting times?
Well, Paul did say the time was short. There are some theologians that say Paul was expecting Christ to return within his lifetime.
Okay, I'm sure Tony has got a few pointers for us to show that perhaps we are living in interesting times because, you know, the New World Order and other things that are happening.
Well, I believe there are definite signs of the second coming. I mean, I know people have said that, you know, it's been said before, but if you think about the way the world's going right now, there's never been a time until recently when Israel has been in place since 1948. Yeah. So the fact that the Jewish people are back in the land of Israel says in Zechariah chapter 12 that Jerusalem will be a burdensome stone burdening all nations.
Yeah.
Which implies that the whole world is going to be somehow involved in a situation over Jerusalem.
So do you think America will abandon Israel then to make that prophecy complete?
Not necessarily. It doesn't actually say about... I mean, it says in the end all the nations will come against Jerusalem, so there'll be a global conflict. But in the short term, I wouldn't say too much on that. But the fact is that it is the burdensome stone that you've got United Nations, European Union... Yeah. America, Russia as the quartet that's seeking to bring a resolution to the Arab-Israeli conflict.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in one sense, although the Arab-Israeli conflict is big, it's not the only conflict in the world.
No.
There are a lot more people being killed, actually, in conflicts in Zaire.
It seems to be the one that we all keep coming back to, though, isn't it? I mean, the fuss and bother that was made over Gaza, when plenty of civilians were being killed in Afghanistan, then you got Sudan, you got Zimbabwe, you got, you know, stuff all over the world, but...
Yeah.
Something, just the slightest thing happening in Israel, and the world's pressing.
It's funny that, because I would have said, a few weeks ago, I would have said, it's because it's the most Western involved. But there are protests in Uruguay and in Argentina and all these different places. So actually, it is, for some reason, it's that conflict. It's affecting
I've just seen
a lot of people.
They are still protesting about Gaza. Yeah. The lefties and the Muslims.
In Lincoln.
In towns all over this country.
Going back to this new world order and world government,
it
makes you wonder how on earth they could all sit around the same table. You know, if they're making these alliances with these different blocks of power... that they're so strong and alliances started. Being formed. Earlier we were talking about
the picture in Daniel, which is another Daniel chapter 2. You've got the 10 toes of the image, the iron and the clay, which is also repeated in Revelation. You've got the 10 kings who give their power to the beast in Revelation.
So and do we have a 10 nation?
Well, we don't at the moment, no. But one of the... I mean, there are different views about what the 10 kings are, whether it's 10 European countries or 10 blocks of nations.
Yeah.
But from Daniel, it's clear that although they are sort of together, they're not together. So they're, as it says, it's partly strong and partly fragile.
Oh, right.
The iron doesn't mix with the clay. So it's like there is this coming together, but it's also not unstable.
I heard there was a region, like we were in part of an EEC region that covers north of France and the south of England, to sort of destabilise the idea of nationalism, which is lumped together with the French.
You know. But if, I mean,
apparently that's happened.
On the Daniel bit, if that's the case, then if there is a new world order, it will be a kind of a fragile coming together, which then it seems falls apart as well, because you've got the wars of the tribulation, the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
When the
G8 become
the G10,
out.
That's when we need to start worrying.
Yeah. They are forced together. They're reluctant to be together, but they're forced.
Yeah, I mean, the G8, the G10, the G20, there isn't yet.
But G8. 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 Yeah, okay. What's that opera group as well?
G4.
G4.
Add another one of them, G4. And then two other, and you've got some problems.
Yeah, I mean, you could get, A1. I mean, it's interesting.
Ah, but Jesus, we should be looking to.
That's right.
I just wanted to mention the material that Tony's covered and where it's available, especially this one here.
Yeah.
If you could just say where you've got the material that you've printed out this morning.
Well, I produce a magazine called Light for the Last Days, which is available to anyone who wants it. You can write into a box number, box BM4226. That's London, WC1N. 3XX.
And your website, Jeff?
Website is www.lightforthelastdays.co.uk, or just do a Google search on Light for the Last Days and you'll get it. And I also do a monthly update tape called This Month in Prophecy, which we send out. And a lot of the material I get off various sources on the internet, Prophecy News Watch and so on. But also from the Bible. The Bible's got to be the main thing.
Is there a cost to the
Well, we suggest a contribution to the magazine, but we're not.
That's good. Well, we covered quite a few subjects.
This has been one of my favourites.
Thanks, Tony.
Also, I run the fellowship at the Bridge, which is in Golders Green, 54 Bridge Lane, Northwest 11. So if you around that area would like to come along, be pleased to see you.
When is it, what day of the week?
We have meetings on Sundays, 11 and 6:30, and various midweek meetings, but they're a bit movable.